Welcome to The Advertising Show, America's only radio program focusing on advertising, media, marketing, product development, branding, new media, sales and customer relations. Stay with us for entertaining marketing discussion and our special guest interview. Now, here are your hosts, Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe.
So glad you're here at The Advertising Show with Ray Schillens and Brad Forsythe. The Advertising Show being brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production, and today we have Jonathan Nee with us. Jonathan is the co-author of a book called The Curse of the Mogul, What's Wrong with the World's Leading Media Companies. And we'll talk with Jonathan here in just a few minutes for a few segments as well. Jeffrey Gittimer, always great to have Jeffrey along for the ride, too, at The Advertising Show. And he's got a little secret of how you can turn no into yes. In other words, building a little thicker skin and answering that rejection call and maybe feeling a little bit better about it, because a no can be sometimes rather devastating, and many no's can be really devastating. Gene Bliss later on this hour, believe your customers. In other words, if they're saying something about you, well, it's probably true. Brad, there's a website called Yelp.com. Have you heard of that?
Sure.
Have you?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Interesting, yeah. Article in Inc. magazine about, speaking of believing your customers, where this one guy complained about this lady's bookstore as being messy and in need of, cleaning up. And she went back on and she basically verbally attacked him with this Yelp on the site. And she sent a whole bunch of nasty stuff. And then she finally escalated to the point that she went and visited this guy who was complaining about that, and got into a whole bunch of trouble. I think she was charged with battery. So if you are on Yelp, listen to your customers and believe your customers, but please use some Yelp etiquette. That would be Yetiquette or something like that.
Yeah, well, that's been the big rap about Yelp. If you're a competitor to another, for example, restaurant, you could be having your employees, or you worse, could be, logging on and saying not good things about your competition. And so you've got to be careful about what you read on there, though. It's a little, it's a good idea, and I think they're very successful. I've used it before. I don't base a reservation to a restaurant on it, but it does give you a little lie the land on what people are thinking about a restaurant or a retail outlet or a hotel or whatever. So it's interesting.
Speaking of I was going to say, with all things that way, whether it's Yelp or whether it's Facebook or Twitter or whatever you want to do, or even just a basic blog, you're always wondering, is this legitimately a true comment or compliment or something?
You're right.
And it's not. So.
Yeah, and buyer beware, and reader be smart, and hopefully see through that. Speaking of rejection, you heard all the hubbub with Conan and so forth earlier this week as we record this. He wrote a 6-7 paragraph note, I
He's
guess.
He's a very smart man. He's also a lot richer than he used to be as well. So
good. We'll see what happens. I don't know. And as soon as I saw all that break loose, I said to myself, has anybody ever wondered what happened to Craig Kilborn?
The guy. Yeah, really.
No, you better be careful here, Conan. There's not a lot of other options when it comes to broadcast networks, not cable networks, but broadcast networks. And if you want to go to another network, wouldn't you want to kind of use your current relationship before you throw that out the window and leverage that against some deal you could be making on the side with Fox? I don't know. I'm just thinking here.
I don't know that he will harm himself and or his future with some of the things that he's saying. And frankly, it's probably exactly what that time slot needed, including the fact that David Letterman is promoting all of the conflict that's going on there as well. I find it laughable.
Yeah.
I don't find it unusual that executives have screwed up things, because usually that's the way it is. But this whole thing is incredibly funny to me. Imagine how much money they've lost on this whole promotional aspect and the change and everything that goes along with that. And everybody's saying, well, Leno's going back to the Tonight Show, and it'll be life as it was before, except without Conan. Now, I've come to, you know, you and I know, I really like Letterman. Letterman's incredibly impromptu and very good. But I've come to really enjoy the Leno stuff. And I've actually enjoyed his show as well. I can understand why it might not compete against some of the other more dramatic and, you know, suspense type shows. But I thought they did a pretty good job with everything. And I like Jay. I think he's doing a good job with what he has. And he's just a really classy guy. So yeah. I think it'll be fun when this whole thing plays out. But I think we've got Jay back on The Tonight Show. And that's okay with me.
I think so. I think you're right. That would be my guess. I project Jay Leno and Fallon will
Fallon.
You know, yeah. And Conan will be gone, and he'll go somewhere, and it'll be business as usual. And we'll all say, "Remember the day when they tried this deal in primetime and it didn't work?"
Unbelievable what NBC has done. Unbelievable. But I like the Today Show, so that's a good thing. Hey, let's take a break here for Jeffrey Gittimer. The secret, a little secret of pushing rejection aside and turning no into yes. May not happen right away. Let's listen.
Quick takes on sales and customer relations with Jeffrey Gittimer, nationally syndicated columnist in the network of City Business Journals and other great publications worldwide. If you're offended by common sense commentary, don't you dare listen. Now, here's Jeffrey.
One of the things that will challenge you about your personal motivation, about your personal inspiration, is the little thing called rejection. Now, rejection doesn't come all the time in an absolute form. Sometimes it comes in just little ways where someone won't appoint you or someone won't give you the next meeting that you need. It's all about your persistence at doing it. You can never take the first rejection as an absolute, or you will never achieve at sales in a way that you're dreaming about. And it's going to take all the energy out of you. It's going to drain your feeling, drain your soul if you take the first no. You have to be able to get past that in order to either get better or get out of the slump or achieve the goal. I referred to it early on in my writings as being able to, the most sales are made after the seventh no. Well, it's not exactly no, it's more not yet. And you have to be able to be persistent enough in order to be able to hang in there enough in order to be able to achieve what it is that you're working for. Personal motivation, personal inspiration comes from being able to accept the rejection part of this process and turning the no into not yet and eventually turning it into a yes.
Quick takes on sales and customer relations from The Advertising Show, the only radio show in America featuring Jeffrey Gittimer as a regular weekly guest. To learn more about his books, tapes, CDs, and speaking engagements, log on to Gittimer.com, Gittomer.com. And tune in next week when we'll hear Jeffrey say,
"This is Jeffrey Gittimer, reminding you that if no one responds to your ad, it may be because your ad sucks."
Well, I've got to tell you, if you don't get Jeffrey's weekly e-zine or have grabbed some of his books that are basically quick reads, the kind you want to keep around and share with friends, you're missing the bet. Thank you, as always, Jeffrey, for being a part here at The Advertising Show. Jonathan Nee is our special guest. He is the co-author of The Curse of the Mogul, which also could be a Harry Potter book, right? What's wrong with the, and then you add the addendum, the, what's wrong with the world's leading media companies, a.k.a. Bernie Madoff. He's also an adjunct professor and director of the media program at Columbia Business School, not to be confused with the Columbia Broadcasting School. No, right, exactly. A longtime investment banker, he's also the author of The Accidental Investment Banker, and Jonathan lives in New York, which is a grand place. I would assume that that will be the same place that Conan O'Brien will be going back to after the next few weeks here.
You know, anyway, if Bernie was in the media business, he may still not, he may be out of prison. He maybe never would have gone to prison.
He would have never gone to prison, and that's a very interesting way to put it. Man, I'll tell you one thing, he left behind some really nice digs all over the place, whether it's New York and or West Palm or whatever. It was a good life for Bernie. Not anymore. We've got to take a break here. The Advertising Show, being powered by Schiphol.com. It's S-C-H-I-P-U-L.com. And a platform called Tendency, which is an incredibly killer marketing platform. check it out. Ed and his gang do a great job for the advertising show. And thanks for heading into 2010 with us as well, Ed. We appreciate that. Ray and Brad back in just a minute with more on the advertising show.
You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth.
Nobody can call George Whipple an old fuddy-duddy. This new sign is right up with the times. Maybe this will stop the ladies from squeezing Charmin bathroom tissue.
Please don't squeeze the Charmin, indeed.
Back on The Advertising Show with Ray Shillins and Brad Forsyth, and our very special guest out of New York this weekend is Jonathan Nee, co-author of The Curse of the Mogul. What the heck is wrong with the world's leading media companies? Jonathan, as we start off the new year, it's great to have you here at the Advertising Show. Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, Jonathan, you and your two co-authors, I'm curious, what was it that prompted you two to, or I guess you'd say you three, to write this book?
Well, we've been teaching a course on the subject for about 5 years up at Columbia Business School, and what really made us think it was time to share some of the insights that we built over that 5 years of teaching with a broader audience is the fact that out in the world, all of a sudden, people started talking about how all of the media businesses are in crisis, and all of the leaders of those companies have been articulating strategies for solving that crisis, which to our mind were pretty dangerous, and in fact, more likely designed to accelerate the problems rather than fix them. So we thought it was time to tell the story about what's really been going on in the media business and shining some light on the basic data of the media business, which somehow has been obscured, not because it's not widely available in public, but because the people who run these companies do a remarkably good job at marketing themselves and convincing people that they're indispensable to their businesses rather than having people focus on what the actual returns and results of those businesses have been over the last not just few years, but decades.
So when you say accelerate the problems rather than fix them, what are we talking about as far as problems?
Well, you know, when you look at the simplest and most obvious problem is the problem for any poor sucker who's owned a share of any of the big media companies. Because if you've held shares in those companies, you have done a lot worse than your grandmother who bought ETFs and just sat in the market. And that's true whether you've owned them for 5, 10, 15, 20, 25 years. So when people say, oh, you know, the problems in these media companies, the fact that advertising is going down, that the old media is going away, it's the problem of the Internet. Well, that would be a little more believable if these companies had done well before the Internet. But the fact is they've been underperforming and underperforming consistently for decades, for a generation. And it is true that the Internet makes it harder and has accelerated some of the problems. That isn't the cause. And the strategies that have been articulated by the big companies since AOL Time Warner, which, you know, is just been celebrating, I guess if you could call it that, its 10-year anniversary, haven't changed. The big media companies say, I want to grow at all costs. I want to embrace the Internet. I want to go global. And content is king. That's exactly the justification for AOL Time Warner. And when you think about each of those elements and you think about what connection, if any, they have with what's likely to happen to the share price, the fact is pushing on any of those buttons with the intensity that media companies do is likely to get you low returns, not high returns.
Well, staying with the AOL Time Warner example, yeah, 01, the merger, Steve Case, a mogul in his own right, Ted Turner, I guess, with Time Warner at that point, since their merger in 96. Are we talking about an ego issue here? Are we talking about a Wall Street-driven need to show growth? I mean, what exactly is the cause of all of this?
I think it's the deadly interrelationship between those two things. That is, you know, the desire for growth at all costs is a very dangerous predilection, because growth is not good or bad in itself. It's all a question of how much you pay for that growth. And if you pay too much for that growth, as certainly was the case for the poor Time Warner shareholders, or indeed the shareholders in CBS Viacom, or the shareholders in any of the biggest deals that have happened over the last couple of decades, then growth is definitively bad. This is not a new concept. If you overpay for something, you destroy value. And many of the biggest media companies have these strange dual-class shares, which allow the people who run the company to control what happens, even though they don't have the same economic interest. The poor guys who just own regular shares rather than these special high vote shares basically are just along for the ride. And when you absolutely control, and what's a mogul if not somebody who is really king of their realm, when you absolutely control something, well, you know, diluting everybody else where your value is more driven from being king of a bigger and bigger realm, it's not shocking that the result is not a happy one for the rest of the rest of the shareholders. But I do think in media, the danger is, and the source of the problem is something even more deep than this funny dual class situation that you see much more often in media than elsewhere. And that is that somehow these media moguls convince the world that they are somehow indispensable to these businesses. And the boards and the shareholders give them a level of leeway that they don't give to CEOs of other companies. Somehow, because, you know, they're managing creative people or something, the AOL Time Warner deal wasn't dual class, but Jerry Levin got that board approved, got their board to approve that deal with one board meeting. I mean, most companies wouldn't do a $100 or $200 million deal, much less a $100 or $200 billion deal, with one board meeting. You need several board meetings. This was one board meeting and a weekend of due diligence. And the fact that they let that happen was reflective, I think, of the fact that people just sort of believe the spin about these businesses being ones where the leader is a visionary, and if he's gone, you know, it'll all fall apart, and you just have to give deference to them because they understand the magic of media and all of that nonsense. And the fact is, when you look at the returns and the share prices of these companies over a generation, if that's what you get by giving them the keys and just basically letting them do what they want, you're probably better off doing something else.
It's another way to look at the world's leading media companies, and the book is called The Curse of the Mogul. What is wrong with the world's leading media companies? With our special guest, co-author Jonathan Nee, of his book, with Ray Shellens and Brad Forsyth here at The Advertising Show. We'll take a break. We'll come back and then do some more here in just a moment.
Why do more media professionals read iwantmedia.com? iwantmedia.com features reports from industry leaders and media personalities. iwantmedia.com gives you quick access to news, stats, trade orgs, and industry publications, and it's updated daily. Forbes says iwantmedia.com contains everything media professionals need to stay ahead of the game. The Washington Post calls it the source for the serious media geek. Do you get it? If you don't, you should. To sign up for free daily email alerts, visit iwantmedia.com.
Make informed decisions about your company's advertising strategy. This is The Advertising Show.
See the USA in your Chevrolet. America is asking you to call. Drive your Chevrolet through the USA. America's the greatest land.
Happy to be spending time with Jonathan Nee, who is co-author of the book. It's a brand new book called The Curse of the Mogul. What is wrong with the world's leading media companies? And you mentioned Bernie Madoff in this book as well. So you think some of the other guys out there ought to be sitting next door to Bernie, huh?
Well, I think what they have in common is that they are masters of illusion. I mean, if you had if you just take the three largest media conglomerates since 2000. They have written down, and again, this isn't secret, you just get their balance sheets, they've written down over $200 billion of assets. And most of that is not AOL Time Warner, it's dozens of other deals that made no sense where they've written down the assets. But you don't see on the front cover of the Wall Street Journal stories about that. If it's about a media company, it's more likely about, you know, what some old guy had for breakfast at the Sun Valley retreat. So these guys are incredibly good at getting you to focus on anything else except what's going on in the front of your face.
Wow. Yeah. Well, you know, speaking of that, Clear Channel, media mogul Lowry Mays and his two sons were the hot media property for stock speculators back in the 90s and early 2000s, Jonathan. As you know, they've recently gone private. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, the one thing you'd say about that business in terms of from an operating point of view is that they focused largely on what they were good at, which is radio and outdoor, which are both really good businesses. The problems with that business when it went private was simply that they put way, way too much debt on it at the top of a debt bubble. And when you see people talking about a number of industries like the newspaper industry and the radio industry and saying, oh, these industries are over because they're going bankrupt, it's important to distinguish between a broken capital structure and a broken business. There's no question these businesses aren't as good as they once were, but they're still pretty good businesses. Mm-hmm. A number of outdoor advertising businesses still have 30% margins. Radio businesses still have 30% margins. Even newspaper businesses, which people are always saying, oh, this is terrible, they're dead, we need government money to help newspaper businesses.
Oh,
the small newspaper businesses, that is the monopoly, not the New York Times, not the Wall Street Journal, the guts of the newspaper business are small monopoly papers around the country, like Gannett has, like Lee Newspapers has. Those are still 20% margin businesses. The movie business, the music business, the book business has never been more than a 10% margin business. So when people say, oh, my God, we need government help, you wonder what they're smoking. It's true a number of these businesses are going to go bankrupt, but they're going to go bankrupt because when they were 40% margin businesses, they put 10 times leverage on them, and now that can't be supported. Mm-hmm. Obviously, those capital structures need to get restructured, but the businesses themselves, the underlying operating businesses, are actually still good businesses.
Well, networks have always been profitable, extremely profitable, as a matter of fact, yet so-called moguls out there have leveraged some of their more profitable assets to purchase other media assets that are outside of their, I don't know, what would you call it, core competencies, and kind of, I guess, at the expense of some of their more profitable assets within their company. Is that a fair assessment?
I think you hit it right on the nose. I mean, if you look at all of the biggest deals that have happened, at the end of the day, the vast majority of them are about people getting bored with their existing businesses. They're not growing as fast. They're not as sexy as they were. No. And rather than trying to fix them, and indeed, when businesses start to slow or start to have challenges, that's when it needs the attention and focus of management more than ever, not less than ever. But what moguls are more likely to do is to take that cash flow while it's there and just buy something else that they don't know anything about, that is not connected to their business, that is highly dilutive, that is very expensive, and that is diverting their attention from where they should be focusing their attention on, which is their existing core businesses.
So it's all about ADHD in a corporate stance, right, or something like that. It's Ray Shillings and Brad Forsythe here with a very special guest out of New York, Jonathan Nee, who is the co-author of The Curse of the Mogul, What is Wrong with the World's Leading Media Companies. We'll tell you more in just a moment.
How can 18 different companies all sell the exact same thing known as water? It starts here in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most thought-provoking, groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. Your job demands you not only have good ideas, but great ideas. And those great ideas have to start somewhere. And that somewhere is in the pages of Advertising Age, and also online at adage.com.
How can you get someone's attention if you don't have $10 million in a celebrity endorsement? It starts here, in Advertising Age, the leading source for marketing, advertising, media, and ideas. For almost 75 years, we've covered the most innovative and groundbreaking stories in the industry, giving you the competitive edge to be a leader. The next big idea demands out-of-the-box thinking. Start your search for greatness in the pages of Advertising Age and also online at adage.com.
Simplifying the complex world of advertising. To reach Ray and Brad with your questions, log on to theadvertisingshow.com. This is The Advertising Show.
It's a real thing in the back of your mind. What you're hoping to find is a real thing.
On the Advertising Show, Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth. James Stewart, who is a Pulitzer Prize-winning author of Disney War, talks about it this way. Packed with vivid examples, the curse of the mogul dares to say what has long been staring us in the face. To understand the media business, you need to be a psychotherapist. It's an insider's view of how big egos often trump their irrational decision-making, which is invaluable and hugely entertaining for anybody interested in the high-profile world of media. That should get you out there to get the book. Jonathan, pleasure to have you here. Welcome back.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, I might add, Ray, Portfolio is the imprint publisher, and might also add, everything you're hearing us talk today is in the book. We're just having a casual chat with one of the authors, and just an intriguing, very interesting read. I encourage all of our listeners to check it out. Can the evolution of today's numerous media moguls, so to speak, be traced back to the deregulation of media ownership here in the U.S. a few decades ago, Jonathan?
I don't think so. I mean, these were always family businesses for many years. If anything, people's fears about over-consolidation of the media, I think, are pretty misplaced. I mean, if you look at the direction that things are going because of technology, media is getting more and more fragmented, as is the ownership of media getting more and more fragmented. And the idea that one big evil mogul is going to corner the market for ideas when you've got the internet there is just, unrealistic. I think there probably does need to be some more focus of these companies. The problem is that these companies are in dozens of businesses, many of which are undergoing some pretty fundamental transformations and require a lot of time and attention, and nobody can manage all of them at once. So I do think you're going to see more breaking up of companies. You've seen Time Warner spin off AOL, spin off Time Warner Cable. You've seen Viacom, CBS undo themselves. And I think that's the direction that you're likely to see things go in.
You know, I want to, I don't want you to get out of here, but getting you to weigh in on the future of newspapers. But before we do that, in more recent times, Murdoch has been arguing for walling off free content and moving to a paid subscription model. I don't know. We've been saying for a long time here on the show that that's the drug dealer business model, isn't it? But, you know, give it to them for free and then eventually charge them. Is this really conceivably possible that you can transition from free content to the subscription model, do you think, Jonathan?
I got to tell you, these guys have gotten it wrong so many times. Mm-hmm. They go from extremes, from, oh, you got to throw everything for free, to you got to wall everything off and charge for it. And there's lots of different answers for different pieces. And they tend to get it completely backwards. So with the newspapers, the thing that they gave away free was the thing they should have been charging for, which is the stuff you can't get anywhere else, which is the intensely local content that only they collect, and they're the only place they can get it. The things they were making it hard for people to get to were things like the classified advertising, because they made so much money for it. And because of that, they let companies like Monster grow out of nowhere and eat their lunch. So the right answer is going to be a nuanced mix, and the problem is that the people who ran very fat and happy monopolies for many years are generally not the right people to manage a transformation and a restructuring. I mean, the original New York Times strategy of putting just the opinion behind a paywall is, again, indicative of this sort of thing. Opinion you can get anywhere for free.
Sure.
It's the other stuff that should have been behind the paywall, not the right. opinion.
Yeah. Yeah, well said. Before we get you out of here, maybe just to wrap it up, give us your thoughts about trends towards media globalization. What's going on out there?
You know, people love to talk about globalization, and that's the trend, but these are intensely local businesses. Think about, you know, the CBS network. Does owning the CBS network mean you're going to be good at owning a TV network in Germany? All of the trends in those countries, there was a time 20 years ago where all they were watching were dubbed versions of U.S. content. It's all intensely local. So the idea that there's going to be one big global media conglomerate, most of these big media companies have a tiny fraction of their businesses outside of the U.S. The only exception to that is News Corp, and they really don't run a global business. They run a multi-local business. To me, the biggest evidence for what we're arguing for is to look at these big moguls and ask, how did they get rich in the first place? Did they get rich by running global internet content businesses? No. They got rich by running intensely local businesses that did not rely on fancy high-priced content, that weren't growing particularly fast, and were not of that type. So Ted Turner got rich by cornering the market for billboards in the Southeast. Sumner got rich by cornering the market for movie theaters in the Northeast. But now that they're heads of big companies, all of a sudden the answer is to be global, to be content-oriented, and to embrace the Internet. Well, you know, I would look at how they got rich in the first place rather than what they say is the right answer today.
Great advice, and you'll find more in the book. It's called The Curse of the Mogul, What's Wrong with the World's Leading Media Companies. And, Jonathan, it's been a real pleasure talking to you today.
Thank you.
On The Advertising Show, Ray Shillings, Brad Forsyth, back with more in just a moment.
Smart marketers are discovering a new and better way to get creative solutions. One company got solutions for a corporate identity program in less than 36 hours. The second got solutions for a public relations campaign that won 2 international creative awards. The third got solutions for a direct marketing campaign that got a 30% response rate. These marketers are finding creative solutions in a better way, the Open Ad way. You go to openad.net and gain access to a global brain trust of nearly 11,000 creators. Within days, you get 20 or more creative solutions, and you pay only for the solutions you use. It's a radical new idea. You owe it to yourself to discover what it can mean to have creative solutions on demand. Find out now by going to openad.net. OPENAD.net. Creative solutions on demand.
Make your advertising dollars work smarter. You're listening to The Advertising Show with Ray Shillings and Brad Forsyth.
Thanks again to Jonathan Neat, co-author of The Curse of the Mogul, What is Wrong with the World's Leading Media Companies. We've got a great show coming your way next week as well. We'll tell you about that here in just a moment. I think this is interesting. We know Linda Kaplan Thaler as the, as she's got the Kaplan Thaler Group. And right. This is interesting. They've been doing the Aflac spots, right? The agency.
Right.
And
right.
You see a lot of stuff online with their current slogan, but basically Aflac is gone. They are taking the agency, it says here, and leaving the agency and taking the duck. It's quite interesting. In recent days, the cartoon version of the duck has turned up on billboards and high-traffic sites like Times Square, and basically the web address is youdontknowquack.com. And Earlier this week.
Who's taking the duck?
Aflac is going elsewhere. And,
yeah, well, I mean, I guess they own the duck since they were the client when it was created for them, so no big
nothing,
deal.
Nothing wrong with that, but the significance of that is, Kaplan Thaler did this campaign for them, and right. then in the middle of executing this campaign has requested other agencies to participate in a pitch. And so Thaler is saying, I don't think so. Have a nice day. So that's quite interesting. Business is gone. Current campaign is on. And they got the duck, and she doesn't.
Well, you know, who was it? Fallon many years ago, not that many years ago, out of Minneapolis, had taken BMW from a little German import to what they are known to today. And BMW said, we're going to do an agency review here. And Fallon, who we had Mr. Fallon on the agency, on the show at one time several years ago, I can't tell you how much respect I have for a guy that says, oh, really? Well, go ahead and have your review. I'm not participating.
Exactly. I recall that interview. And he's about to be inducted into the Hall of Fame as well, as if I'm not mistaken. A really great guy. We've got Gene Bliss with us here on the Advertising Show. Believe your customers. Believe what they say, because they are always, always, always right. Let's listen.
Welcome to the customer experience, making customers your true priority for a profitable outcome, with your host, author, speaker, consultant, and customer crusader, Gene Bliss.
As employees, we are often penned in by rules and regulation which seem to define our every move. As customers, we fear we don't know the rules, and sometimes, even worse, that we won't be believed. Let's say you have purchased the shirt, never worn, that you need to return. As the bag is handed over the counter and the sales clerk gives it the once-over, why is there an irrational fear that often takes hold, kicking in an instinct to defend yourself from making that return? This is because as customers, we've come to expect not to be trusted. In another example, let's say you're driving in your car with your child playing in your back seat. Distracted by the little show going on behind your back, you take your eyes off the road for a minute and experience a fender bender. You brace for the call to the insurance company that you've been paying for all these years to cover incidents such as this one. But what do you feel? Fear that the accident won't be covered and fear that the claims department won't believe you. Beloved companies grasp that most people try to do the right thing. They decide to believe. They believe in their employees, and they believe in their customers. Do you?
This has been your weekly installment of The Customer Experience with Gene Bliss. Directing transformational customer insights from major U.S. market leaders, Gene is corporate America's change agent for a new inspirational understanding of today's consumer. To learn more about Gene's books and speaking engagements, or simply how to drive customer profitability for your company, log on to CustomerBliss.com.
So definitely listen to Gene Bliss here with Ray Schillen's Brad Forsyth on the Advertising Show. You know, as we started out this year, Brad, it has been so cold in a good portion of the country. You're talking about up and down the East Coast, on into the central states as well, and just about everywhere else except probably Sedona, Arizona. But it's really interesting to see the changes in what people are buying. For instance, Campbell Soup, in addition to the company's considerable national media, the brand monitors weather patterns in the 30-tier markets like St. Louis, Des Moines, and Tampa, and ramping up local radio when an area gets particularly cold, wet, or snowy.
Well, makes sense.
Yeah, the brand conducts weekly meetings, they say, with buyers to review a 30-city misery index. So booming is a good thing for them. I thought it was kind of cool. Zappos doing their best to grab the attention of shoppers who may be looking for cold weather apparel and foot gear. And it's morphing to get in line with what's happening today. For instance, cold weather outfits are hot is what you would have found on the Zappos site. Zappos, by the way, Brad, what a great company this is. They have
free shipping.
Well, not only that, but they're also opening their culture up to people who want to pay a few thousand bucks to go spend some time and figure out how they do it right. There was a plumber that went there. He came back. He fired 12 of his crew. and to me, what a great way to shake up shake up your business. You know, Zappos is doing it right. They're absolutely right, like L.L. Bean used to be. Not L.L. Bean, but what's the one out of Minnesota? I forget what it is. Land's End. There we go. Now Sears.
That's it.
But, yep. You know, a little bit different now. Not as much product concern. But anyway, Zappos, $4,000. You go sit with them and find out what in the heck makes them tick. I think that's kind of cool.
Huh. Hey, that's interesting.
We are out of time here. Let me find the rest of my notes here because I don't know who is on next week. Do you, Brad?
I certainly do. It is the gentleman that has the hard to pronounce last.
Yeah, David Wiegelt is a chief marketing strategist at Immersion Active. He has also written a book. It's called, he's a co-author of Dot Boom. And we're going to talk with David next week here at the Advertising Show. Happy New Year, if we haven't said that. And thanks for sticking with us here in 2010. The Advertising Show, and thanks to our participants and our advertisers as well, is brought to you by Advertising Age Magazine. Visit online at adage.com. The Advertising Show is a Big Radio Midgets production. That, of course, makes it even better than the Leno Show.